Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Score 7 years ago,
our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation,
conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that
all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war,
testing whether that nation, or any nation so conceived and so
dedicated, can long endure.
Let's see, I recognize Jimmy Carter, Nina Totenberg, I think, Bill Clinton, Nancy Pelosi. Yeah, the Gettysburg Address. And those were the voices. Oh, it was Cardinal Timothy Dolan. Now I have the list in front of me. Whoopi Goldberg also, in addition to the ones that I mentioned. And next week, November 19th, Abraham Lincoln's famous speech turns 150. Documentary filmmaker Ken Burns is with us now to talk about his new project, urging all Americans to memorize and recite the speech, and about his forthcoming documentary called The Address, about a school in Vermont where kids do that every year. If they can do it, you can too, right? We've got six Brian Lehrer Show listeners who volunteered earlier this morning, ready to recite the Gettysburg Address with Ken Burns this morning. That's coming in a few minutes. First, let's talk a little bit. Hi, Ken. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And this is so exciting. This is so cool. The school in Vermont, I should say the Greenwood School, has 50 students recite the Gettysburg Address every year. Does that mean they chop it up into like two words a piece?
No. In fact, this is a boarding school for very young boys, ages as young as 9 to 17, and they're all severely learning. They have severe learning difficulties, dyslexia, ADHD, ADD, dysgraphia, executive function, a whole alphabet soup of problems. So it's a minefield of terrors and anxieties for these boys. But just after Thanksgiving, they're given a task each year, the 35 years that the school's been in existence. And by Lincoln's birthday, they've memorized it. And it is, I've been a judge a couple of years. I live across the river in New Hampshire. And it was so moving. And I just finally decided I've got to make a film of their struggles, which is what we've done. But as we were doing it, we realized, my goodness, if they can do it with all of the baggage they carry, then we can too. And we are so fractured and so dialectically preoccupied, red state, blue state, whatever it is, rich, poor, young, old, that we could do something together. So I reached out to notable Americans and got all the living presidents instantly. I got Bill O'Reilly and Rachel Maddow. I got Marco Rubio and Nancy Pelosi and dozens of others to read it, and we've mashed them all up. They're all on our website, learntheaddress.org. It will be a PBS film called The Address in April, April 15th. And by then, we expect all of you to have memorized this very short speech. You'll put it up, tape up the Bliss version next to your mirror, and you can curse me in the morning, but you'll have it. And then you'll see these boys overcome some of the greatest learning difficulties to do exactly what we've done, and to do it in front of lots of people, which is the other terrifying aspect to their extraordinary accomplishments. So it's an exciting way to celebrate the greatest. You were just celebrating the tallest. This is the shortest great speech in all of humanity. And it still has meaning today. Remember, you're talking about a tall building. When we celebrated the first anniversary of 9/11, one of the few English words spoken, besides the desperately sad list of the dead, was Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. It had nothing to do with the 9/11 attacks, but yet was a doubling down on what the American promise is. And we're still operating from November 19th, 1863, on our promise to ourselves and to the world that we would try to live up to that.
And I guess you're living the red state, blue state life if you're living in New Hampshire and working in Vermont.
Well,
what is it about the Connecticut River that made it a cultural divide? But that's another show.
But it's also, they're both blue states now, so it's a little bit. But what's
kinda
nice is that the history that I've been doing for the last 40 years has not tried to hew to any political standard. It said, what is our shared past about? What can we learn from it? And more importantly, in an age when we've lost the ability to have a civil discourse, history is still a table around which we can agree to cohere, that I don't know anyone that doesn't like Abraham Lincoln. And that's a beginning that we can appeal to, as he said in another famous speech, the better angels of our nature. And that's what we try to do in our work, and no more so than in this little film.
You said you've been a judge for the Greenwood School's Gettysburg Address recitations. Is it a competition?
It's sort of a competition. The mere act of getting up there is so extraordinary and such a victory that to me the awarding of medals and things like that is an afterthought. If you recite it, you get the Greenwood School coin, and these kids are just animated to do it. And an hour before, some are saying, I can't do it. There's no way I can speak in public. And then they pull it off. And we've watched their struggles, watched the whole school sort of dedicate. For some kids, they can memorize it right away, but they've got speech impediments and lisps and defects that make the actual delivery difficult. Others, memorizing is the hard thing, and they can get the meaning. And so what you watch is it all come together. And then finally, what I learned was that the school had, in its 35 years of existence, never been to Gettysburg. So I picked up and took the whole school there, gave them a tour, and filmed them 3 months later, and they still had it on their hard drive, and they'll have it for the rest of their lives.
And just before we do this group recitation with six Brian Lehrschel listeners who are waiting on hold, why, Ken, why is it meaningful to memorize the speech and recite it? And why this? There are many incredible documents in our history. So why memorize and then recite the Gettysburg Address? What are you really after?
I think what I'm after is something that it can engage the whole country at once, that you can put your oars in the water and pull in the same direction despite your politics. You know, my dad grew up in a different generation. He had 6 or 7 hours on his hard drive of memorized portions of Shakespeare plays and bawdy limericks and long poems and things like that, and he was forever reciting. I've got a lot on my memory, but I noticed today memorization has fallen away, and some people say, well, it's just rote, it doesn't mean anything. I disagree. I think it's singing in church. I think it's singing the national anthem at a ball game. I think it's the things we do in common that give us direction and purpose. And I like the idea as you watch these boys work together.
Did we lose you?
Nope, I'm still there.
It's as we watch these boys work together. And now
It's a fantastic and inspiring achievement, and it sends a message, I think, to the rest of us that we can do this, that we can overcome the apparent difficulties we have speaking to one another about even the simplest of contemporary events. This
right.
one is in our DNA. It's part of the statement of who we are, Lincoln's short 2-minute speech.
So we are now ready for a recital here of the Gettysburg Address with Ken Burns and six Brian Lehrschel listeners. We get so many volunteers, so thank you to everyone who raised your hands. But we had to pick a limited number so people would have more than one word to recite. So, Ken, you're going to start us off, I gather, and we'll follow with Natalie, Brent, Leah, Alice, Adam, and William, one after the other. You ready?
Fantastic, yes.
Go ahead.
47 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
Now we are engaged in the great civil war, testing whether that nation or any nation so conceived and so dedicated can long endure. We are met on the great battlefield of that war.
We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives that that nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this.
But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here have consecrated it, far and above our poor power to add or detract.
The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here. It is for us, the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced.
It is rather for us here to be dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain.
That this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from this earth.
That was Ken Burns, Natalie in Montclair, Brent in South Carolina, Leah in Cobble Hill, Alice in Westchester, Adam in Inwood, and William in Alabama. Thank you all so much. We still have Natalie and William and I guess Ken there. Natalie and William, can I just ask, like, how that experience was for you? Did you feel anything while you were learning these lines or thinking about the little piece of it that you were going to recite? Did you have any particular new thoughts about the Gettysburg Address? Just if no is the answer, that's fine. But I'm just curious what the experience was like.
I've always loved the speeches of Abraham Lincoln, even as silly as when they recite a speech of Lincoln's in Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. It always just kind of gets me. He always wrote so eloquently and just so beautifully about what America could be, and it always is just a pleasure just to read the speeches of Mr. Lincoln. So this was a great honor to actually be able to read it out loud.
And Alice in Westchester, you're there too.
Yes.
What do you want to say?
Oh, well, as a black person, it's just phenomenal to have this opportunity to read these words. And you do get a sense of like my mother's generation who had to recite like the Declaration of Independence and stuff. It just is a phenomenal project, and I'm just so proud to have been able to take part.
And as a woman, did you want to change the language to a proposition that all men and women are created equal?
Well, that wasn't my bit, but yes, I suppose one would. I actually started focusing or thinking more about what happened with our, with the shutdown and all, and again, how much these words can come back into our current situation.
Natalie, anything you wanted to add from Montclair there?
I just wanted to say that I had to memorize this in high school for a class, and this was a few years ago, but it was just so... It was great to kind of be able to go back and reread it and just remember that how I had to do this, and we had to do it with our, I guess, own rhetoric and add to it. And so it was really great to be able to read part of it on the air.
Okay. Thank you. And Brent in South Carolina, who read part three. Brent, I understand you're a slavery expert.
Some people say that. Yeah, I'm a college professor. And it's actually, we're getting close to the time in the semester where we get to the Civil War and we get a chance to actually read the Gettysburg Address. And it's something that my students do every semester, every time through. It's absolutely vital to read this short speech to understand just what the Civil War became about after a certain point. So Lincoln's words are just, very, very powerful, and in a very short speech. It's really, really powerful to teach students about the Civil War just through this short passage.
What did you mean by became about? After a certain point, the Civil War.
Well, the emphasis, at least from Lincoln's standpoint, shifted towards being a war for freedom rather than just a war for union. The last line there, that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth, dedicating the battlefield, but also sort of dedicating the union to not just the cause of getting the country back together, but also to the cause of freedom.
Great. Well, thanks again to all six of you for participating, and you're all very good at timing and picking up your cues and not missing a beat, and read with great, great feeling. Ken Burns, a great moment, huh?
Well, I think they all, much more eloquently than I, sort of expressed what it is, the cohesion that comes from this short speech. You know, he wasn't the featured speaker. That task fell to Edward Everett, a noted orator who went on for 2 hours. And afterwards, Everett wrote the president, and he said, I hope that I could have come as close to the central tenet of that moment in 2 hours as you did, Mr. President, in 2 minutes. And that's what it is. It's the most concise speech, and yet it's the most beautiful. And it has the poetry, as the professor from North Carolina said, all in it, and appeals, as you know, as I said before, to the better angels of our nature. That ain't bad.
The legend that I learned as a kid about the speech was that everybody was so moved that they didn't even applaud. Do you know if that's just a myth, and do we know how people actually reacted?
Well, you know, we do. There was a bit of awkwardness because it was assumed after the two-hour masterpiece of Edward Everett that the president would go on for a while. The photographer took his time focusing, and the only picture we have of Lincoln at Gettysburg is of him back in his seat. And I think they were surprised that it was so short. For a long while, it wasn't the great thing that came down to us. The Chicago Times said the cheek of every American American must tingle with shame as they read the silly, flat, dishwatery utterances of the man who has to be pointed out to intelligent foreigners as the President of the United States. But the words endured, and they continue to endure, as if in some ways they are medicine. And I think that's what drew me as I watched the first time, with tears streaming down my cheek, these little boys trying to struggle through the address, and then came back year after year and finally decided to put my money where my mouth was and stop talking about how amazing it was and just get down to the task of observing them for the 3 months it takes them to overcome it. But maybe, it'll take us only a few days, each of us, who don't have these kind of learning difficulties.
Maybe the audience felt cheated with only 2 minutes of the president after a two-hour warm-up act.
After a two-hour, and we tend to sort of denigrate Edward Everett. He was an extraordinary speaker. Jonathan Schwartz would have recognized him as a great jazz virtuoso. He would state a theme, and he would develop things and go off, and the audiences would actually applaud when he came back to the main sort of stem of his thought process, and this was often without notes. And there was Lincoln, not having written this on the back of an envelope, but a carefully crafted thing. Mm-hmm. Unlike most battlefield speeches, doesn't name generals. There are no proper names there. It's all about the celebration of liberty, of the continuation
and I have
of
to
a promise.
Jump in because we have less than a minute left, and I want to make sure that people know, number one, this documentary is going to air in April from Ken Burns, and that you're issuing a big challenge to all Americans to memorize and recite the speech next Tuesday, the 150th anniversary. How should we participate? Do you want us to film ourselves?
Yeah,
what do you want?
You can film it. You can then upload it to learntheaddress.org. We're waiting for you. You'll join all the living presidents. And you don't have till next Tuesday. We can have until April 15th and beyond. This is something we ought to be doing together. So there's no a stopwatch here. It's just, you know, tape it to your mirror in the morning. Let's recognize it and let's do something together and celebrate this great piece of American oratory.
And I do see you've already collected videos of prominent Americans reciting the speech, although it looks like Louis C.K. is definitely reading and hasn't memorized.
Yep. But we're getting there. And
but check out those videos at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show and Ken Burns. This was an awesome radio experience. Thank you so much.
It was really great for me. Thank you. Take care.